Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code KNOWHOW. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 35 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 20% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code KNOWHOW514. On this episode of KNOWHOW, your questions, this stuff, plus more Maker Faire. Welcome to Know How. It's the Twitch show where we bend, build, break, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Ballas here.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
For the next 30 minutes to an hour. We never stay as long as we. But we're going to show you some of the things that we've been doing to geek out in the world so that perhaps you can take it and enjoy your own geek projects. Now, Brian, we're going to get to a feedback episode. Remember what that is?
That's where we go to our favorite G Plus community, mm-hmm. the Know How community, and we look at your questions, see what you asked, and here it is. This plethora of stuff on the desk here. This mess is all the questions that you guys asked.
We made this mess for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But before that, there's been something that's been bubbling around the interwebs for a while, and it's a huge maker project. It's one of these things that's a little bit pie in the sky, but at the same time, I go, I wish this would happen. And you know what that is?
Solar panel roadways.
Yeah. Yes. Or as they call it, solar freaking roadways.
What? Electricity in your roads.
Yes. Now, we've known for a while that there's always been a push for solar panels, right? We want to put solar panels everywhere. And now this couple by the name of Scott and Julie Brusha, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that, they came up with this idea of, well, you know, one of the most open spaces we have in the United States
is the roadways.
Parking lots. Yeah, basically any open paved expanse.
Right, just open areas that absorb sunlight, basically.
Yeah, this is them. Now, it's interesting because he is a master's in electrical engineering. His wife is a psychologist.
Sweet shirt, by the way.
And they're really into green power. They're really into renewable resources. And they received a grant to build a solar parking lot based on these little interlocking solar doodads.
Hexagonal.
Yeah, the little six-sided panels. The cool thing is, so you've got the solar panels, and then you cover it with a layer, like armor of tempered glass, and it's super strong glass. We're talking about something that can withstand like 100 tons of crush force.
Right, which is...
You could land a 747 on that.
Yeah, totally, which is what you need when you have something that's going to be exposed to all those cars, trucks, things like that, motorcycles.
Yeah, so what they did is they looked at, we can't just build a solar road. There has to be a reason why people would deploy this.
Right.
And so they looked at making the modules super, super tough. And the idea is, let's get rid of that asphalt that wears out, let's get rid of the pavement that cracks, and instead give people something that both offers durability and functionality. Not a bad idea.
Well, not only will it absorb the sun and give extra energy to the grid or whatever, but they have LEDs integrated into them, and they're hoping to have like the roadways lit up at night and also have pressure sensitivity so it could sense if something was on the roadway, like a child or a dog or something, and light that area up. So pretty cool. I mean, it's a little... It's like, I'll believe it when I see it, because in the videos they always show, like, the roadway is perfectly lit up with, the bicycle way and everything like that. And I just have a hard time believing it's going to be that well lit in real life. But who knows?
And people in the chat room, they're big in the chat room, they're bright. We've got Virgil who's saying, well, two problems, snow and snow removal. We've got other people saying, well, wait a minute, how slippery is this going to be? Now, the snow, this is cool because these are multi-function modules. Right. And the way they handle snow is...
They can heat up and then melt, and the snow melts away.
Right, so it uses some of the solar power that any... Remember, it doesn't have to be that that module that's receiving sun.
Any of
the modules can receive sun, and since they're interlinked, they shuttle the power around, and it can be used to melt any ice or snow that's on top of the modules.
I know people on the East Coast would love that.
Absolutely. And as for the durability, it's all about the texture that you make. And what they've done is they've used, again, this it's a very, very strong tempered glass with sort of a ridged feel to it, which actually gives you a lot of grip.
I know. I'm really optimistic about it, but also it's like, if these are going to be on our roadways, they're probably going to be there for a long time, and depending on where, it makes me a little nervous as being a motorcycle rider. Like, how is it going to handle wear, and how is the traction going to be? But, you know, if it works as advertised, this is definitely the direction we need to be going with our roads. Because I used to do asphalt inspection, and it's like,
that stuff gets worn down fast.
Oh, it gets worn down fast. It's pretty wasteful. Like, when they are shipping the asphalt to a certain location, if they didn't use all of it, they just dump it and stuff. And it's just like, it's pretty wasteful.
Now, those modules, they're not just solar panels. They're multifunction units. So, of course, you can equip, say, the ones in the east with little heating pads.
Right.
And you don't have to get it really hot. Remember that. When you're talking about something in the long game of a roadway, it's not like you need 100 degrees.
No, you just
need enough temperature to create a layer of melted water between it and the ice or the snow, and it just sort of slides off.
Which hopefully doesn't refreeze and then become black ice, but it should.
If you can keep it just above freezing, it shouldn't become black ice. Right.
Yeah.
Now, the other cool thing is, it's going to have LEDs built in as well as a communications protocol so that the modules can talk to one another. Yeah, here are the modules being assembled. They have smarts in them, so you could, for example, dynamically create shapes. The examples I give is, like, for example, you make a playground out of this or a parking lot, and it can dynamically assign stalls depending on who needs what. Like, for example, say there are a handicap space gets used up, so it generates another one and another one and another one. Or it redraws the lines depending on what kind of traffic you have on a road. Or, for example, it tells you if there's an animal in the road because they're pressure sensitive.
Exactly.
They could tell you if there's an upcoming deer and you get, like, a message in the roadway saying slow down because you're about to hit a deer.
Right. So, well, and then all this news comes into as Google is making their self-driving car, and I imagine they could make something that would talk to the car and allow it to see things ahead of time and stuff like that, because it's like a smart grid, basically.
Yeah. And it's not just a grid, it's the street. So in order to deploy these things, what they're suggesting is that you build a two-channel system. You've got the roadway, which is flat, which is where you put the modules. But then on one side, you have a trench where you could put the cabling. Mm-hmm. And the other side, you'd have a trench where any runoff would go into. So it gives you two benefits, which is, one, you get better control of runoff to make sure that either it goes to a treatment plant or gets dumped where it's supposed to get dumped. And you also have a trench where you could put not just the wiring for the smart road, but also telephone lines or power lines, depending on what you want.
Google Fiber.
Google Fiber.
Crossed.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be kind of cool. Now, the last bit is, they did an Indiegogo. They wanted $1 million. They're up to $1.5 million right now, which is fantastic, which I'd get excited about, except for the fact that a lot of outlets are estimating that if we were going to deploy this over the United States, we would need $56 trillion.
Okay, so that's a little bit bigger number.
We're going to need a bigger Indiegogo.
But, this is the step in the right direction. Like, we definitely need to take advantage of some of these areas that are in direct sunlight all the time. And if we can do that with a smart grid, maybe it can be deployed in smaller numbers in cities or things like that, and then expand from there.
Right. And then look at the chat room. We've got Web 80899 saying, how do they remove the panels of service pipes under the road? Mm-hmm. We've got, Web 1783 saying, well, how much greenhouse gas is produced in the creation of solar panels? Which, it's a very toxic process. Mm-hmm. We've got other people like Keith 512 saying, well, what about bad weather? You know, you put this in the Midwest, you're going to have tornadoes. You put it in the East, you're going to have hurricanes. How is this going to deal with flood?
Ripped up or something.
Yeah, and folks, that's what I love about this. I mean, that's why I can get excited. I know that this is a moonshot. This is pie in the sky. But it's cool technology, and none of the problems that people think of are unsurmountable. They're just technical challenges.
Right. Yeah, and that's part of the fun, right?
Yeah,
the challenge.
Yeah, there you go. Lines. Get rid of those lines. Look at this. Boom and boom. What?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, and see, it lights up where it detects pressure on the roadway.
Yeah.
I know Alex has hit a deer before, so that could have helped him out.
Yeah.
And or, yeah, runways.
This
like
is
lit
one
up
of those
runways
things.
And stuff.
I'm hoping they deploy one of these so that we could at least play with it. I mean, yes, it may be economically unfeasible, but wouldn't it be awesome? I mean, Tron. Really?
Right.
Tron? We'd be living in Tron.
I mean, this is the direction we should be going in,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, should we just continue using asphalt because
Probably not. It's not
because it works and uses up oil and other things, but you know, if we use solar panels, we're putting back in the power that we get from the sun.
Yeah. So, to that couple, we wish you nothing but luck. We hope that you can develop something that the rest of the world will adopt.
Right.
But until then, you know what I thought? You know, we should go from roadways to webways.
Webways.
You know, the internets.
Oh, yeah.
We're kind of using them right now.
Something easy to use.
Yeah. You know, when you have a project, something like Solar Roadways, what they've been doing is they've been doing just a media online blitz.
Right.
They made a viral video. They made sure people knew about it. They ran an Indiegogo campaign. Mm-hmm. But the key to that was creating a site that people could go to and say, no, this is not a scam. I mean, you've seen that, right?
Yeah.
Like, where you get these websites that almost have the crazy eyes on them. You're like,
oh, yeah.
I'm going to put
you... With the flashing GIFs and everything. Like, try now.
It's free energy.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, they didn't want that. They wanted something that was a bit more understandable, that had actual technical details. And that's what they created. Now, their site was okay, but it wasn't great. You know what would have made it better?
A place that has templates already that look pretty good, and you can start off from that.
Yeah, and you know where you could find them?
Squarespace.
That's right. We welcome to the show supporters of the Know-It-Alls, Squarespace. Now, if you have an idea, if you have a project, if you've got a concept that you want to sell people on, how you say that idea is as important as the idea itself. If you're brilliant, if you have something that's going to save the world, but you don't know how to make a site, you don't know how to attract people, you don't know how to keep people there to actually read everything about that idea, you might as well not have that idea at all. Which is why we are so happy to have Squarespace, because they help you take your idea and turn it into something beautiful. Now, Squarespace is all about giving you an all-in-one platform to make it fast and easy to create that professional site that you want. Now, I've used Squarespace to develop sites for the institutions that are part of my church. A lot of places that don't have tech-savvy people. Maybe they have the creative people, but they needed someone to do the programming. They needed someone to register the domain. They needed someone to maintain the web server. You don't have to do any of that with Squarespace. It's a great way to share your weekend project blog or provide the ability to jumpstart a side startup project with a professional-looking site and the ability to quickly and easily take orders and sell creations. Now, some of the things that they're doing that I really, really like is, well, the first thing is they're always improving their platform. They're not just going to sit back and relax and say, well, yeah, we were good in the past, so they're going to trust us in the future. No, they're always giving you new features. They're always giving you new templates. They're always giving you new ways to get your message across. They're also really flexible. This is important for DIYers like myself. We want that set of tools to create our own website without code, from design tools like Layout Engine and the Logo Creator. It's a platform for customization, especially if you know just enough code to get under the hood, which allows you to customize exactly the look and the feel of your site. They also have beautiful designs, 25 templates for you to start with. And recently they added a logo creator. That's a basic tool for individuals and small businesses with limited resources in order to create a simple identity, a unique identity for themselves. Now, Squarespace is also easy to use. It's always got help available for you. They have a live chat and email support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Plus, there is a completely redesigned customer help site for easier access to self-help articles and video workshops. Squarespace also supports e-commerce, now available for all subscription plan levels, including the ability to accept donations, which is great for nonprofits, cash wedding registries, and school fund drives. Squarespace also starts at $8 a month, which really isn't a lot when you consider what it includes, a free domain name, your hosting, and the service if you sign up for a year. Now, Squarespace is also mobile ready. This is one of the things that I really like about them, which is if someone's looking at your page on a desktop or a laptop, it's going to look differently than it does if it looks on your mobile or your tablet. They automatically adjust. They dynamically change the code to make sure that it's going to suit the person who's watching. Now, even their code is beautiful. This is important to me. We all know that Squarespace looks beautiful on the outside, but what's also amazing is that the code is beautiful on the inside. They take just as much pride in their back end as they do in their front end design. Now, here's what we want you to do. We want you to start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required and start building your website now. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code KNOWHOW to get 10% off and to show your love for KNOWHOW. We thank Squarespace for their support of KNOWHOW. A better web awaits, and it starts with your new Squarespace website. Mm-hmm. Brian, what do you say we get into the feedback?
Oh, yeah.
This is that the time that you know we've dedicated to the know-it-alls, to the members of our community.
Our because dedicated fans.
Dedicated fans who actually come to us with questions or projects. And we decided that we should answer a couple of these things.
We want to let you know that we care. And we also brought in a special announcer for the event.
We did.
He's coming in from the sky desk, hovering 1,000 feet over Twit, is Gregory Burnett.
Gregory,
hey guys.
He's actually a super, super advanced narrator of dreams, actually on his title.
I come to you in your sleep.
Yes, yes.
It's
now,
very scary.
Greg, what do we got first?
Okay, so first up is Alex Martinez, and he saw Padre's use of LEDs to react to sound, but he wants to kick it up a notch. He wants to use multicolored lights and control them to change colors that react to music. He also wants to put a diffuser on the LED lights and wants to know if there's a product that he can buy to do that.
Actually, that's a really good question, and here's the thing. You don't have to change anything from what we showed you. Mm-hmm. You really don't. Now, remember this. These were our little dancing LED strips. This was like our first attempt. Just red and blue for the left and the right channels. And it used a little TIP31C transistor to trigger. So whenever it detected voltage, which was the sound from that channel, it would allow through a 12-volt signal, which would actually light these things up.
And then we had our dance party.
And then we had our dance party. Now, here's the thing. You can actually buy these strips in tricolor. They have the RBG, the red, blue, green. And right now on Amazon, I think it's like $17, will give you a spool of, 20 meters, 30 meters,
something like that.
It's a lot. No, 17 feet. That's right. 17 feet. And it's already encased in a polymer bubble, which it's nice and weatherproof. Mm-hmm. Now, you may ask yourself, well, we've got left channel, we've got right channel, but what about the third? You said you wanted RBG.
Yeah.
Very easy. You take a third TIP31C transistor. And remember, these are tiny. These are not a whole lot. And you tie it to the crossover. If you've got a stereo system in your car, you've got something that separates the highs, the lows, and the mids, right?
Right.
So you just tie it to one of those. Like, for example, I could do red on the left channel, blue on the right channel. And then for the green, I would tie it to the bass. So anytime there's a bass signal, it'll pulse the green.
So there'd be a lot of green in your car.
Exactly.
Because you're always pumping that bass.
Exactly. And the nice thing about the tricolor strips is because they're all under the same protector/diffuser, it's not going to be just pulse of red, pulse of green, pulse of blue.
It's going to be all those.
It's going to be all those colors. It looks really... In fact, you know what? You gave us a really good idea. I think
you want to do that
I
now?
Think we can do this.
You want to kick it up a notch?
I want to kick it up a notch.
Bam.
Yeah. I mean, you know I like blinky lights.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah.
And this is nothing. I mean, this entire project, if you just use one 17-foot stream, if you use the power supply that was already in your car, the 12 volts that runs through the low voltage connector, and if you bought yourself a couple of TIP31C transistors, it would probably cost you a total of $30.
Nice.
Yeah. And then of course you need to install it properly, because mine always is jack.
$30 is a very little price to pay for the sweet, sweet colors that'll be coming out.
I think we should do this to your motorcycle. Although you probably don't have a great stereo on your motorcycle.
No, not on my motorcycle.
I just realized. No.
But we could still light it up for fun.
We could put like a microphone, and then it would just...
Wait,
we could tie it into your revometer. What do they call that? RPM meters?
You threw me off. It's a tachometer.
Tie it to your tachometer, and we could just have the colors change as it goes up.
No, oh, that would be
Would you
cool.
let me do that to your bike?
Probably not, but Burke's bike is around somewhere.
Hey, Burke!
Hey, Burke, can we get that bike? He won't even notice.
He totally won't notice.
Well, nice. So that would be kicking it up a notch.
That's definitely kicked.
What's the next thing we got in line, Greg?
Up next is Jason Miles, and he recalls from episode 87 how you guys cleaned up Adobe Bloat on a PC. Well, he wants to know, how do I do it on a Mac?
You know, this is actually, that's one of the tips that we've received the most comments on. I've gotten the most email because there were people who were like, I had no idea this was happening.
Where did all my storage go?
And, right. you know, if you've got a rotating drive, you may not have noticed it because you've probably got a couple terabytes.
Right.
But if you're running like a 128 or a 240 gigabyte SSD.
Like on a MacBook Air.
You start going, dude, I have like 100 gigs free. Where is everything?
It adds up quick.
And the sad thing is, you know, Adobe doesn't give you a... They should have a button there that says delete it, but they...
It's not that obvious.
It's not.
You know, if you didn't know about it, it just piles up. Yeah. So it's pretty simple. Yeah. It's not much different from then on the PC. But if you go to my laptop, I've got a little project in Premiere open here. And Premiere is... pretty identical on the Mac, but what you do is you go to Premiere Pro at the top, Preferences, and down under Media, there's a little option under Media Cache Database, and you can just hit Clean, and that'll clear it out. And if you find that there's still some residual data that needs to be deleted, you can go in manually and browse through it. So right. pretty simple, pretty straightforward. One difference I learned, though, is you know how you said you can make GIFs in Premiere?
Yeah.
You can't do that on the Mac.
I know. Some of the functionality is slightly different.
That's really weird.
I know. It's the same software. It's just not the same software.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry. But if you have unnecessary Adobe bloat, it's still relatively simple to get rid of on the Mac.
Yeah.
But it happens on the Mac, too.
So. You just have to remember to do it.
Right.
And let me be clear. This is not a bug of the software. It's actually a feature of Premiere. Because one of the things that takes the longest time is to import assets into any NLE, nonlinear editor. So what Adobe is trying to do is they're trying to say, well, if you brought in this asset, you're probably going to use it again.
So it's already preloaded. And it'll go a lot quicker. But one thing also to remember is if you are saving stuff to a remote hard drive or something, make sure that's plugged in when you do it because it won't see it otherwise.
It will freak out.
Yeah.
Right. So this is from experience, right?
No, of course.
So
yeah.
How much extra time did this add to a project?
I don't even want to talk about it.
All right, let's move away. It's a painful memory. Greg, what do we got next?
Well, Alex Holinsky wants to get a hybrid hard drive for his laptop, but he wants to know the best way to configure it.
Ah, okay. I know. Okay. Here's the thing. This is a hybrid hard drive. Okay, this is a Momentus XT, and the idea is I've got 500 gigabytes of rotating storage, mm-hmm. and I've got 16 gigabytes of SSD. It doesn't look like a separate SSD. In fact, to the computer, this is just a single 500 gigabyte drive. What happens is the drive electronics themselves will look at the data stream and will find what are the most used files. That goes to the SSD. So anytime someone asks, the operating system asks for that data, mm-hmm. it comes out of the SSD instead of the hard drive. The thing is, you don't have to configure this. You don't.
It happens all automatically.
It's all automatically. But I know what he's talking about, and I want to talk a little bit about that. He's talking about the proper way to set up an SSD. When we've got one of these SSDs, there are a few things, especially if you're using Windows, mm-hmm. that you want to change to make sure that it's going to operate properly. Now, especially if you're using an older version of Windows, you need to make sure that trim is enabled. So
what's that do?
So what trim does is when you've got an SSD, The limiting factor is how many times you write. Every time you write to a memory cell, mm-hmm. you're actually using up some of its slide span. It only has a certain number of writes. You can read as many times as you want.
But writing uses it,
right.
So, and it's a lot, right?
It's a lot. It is a lot. But especially when you consider the aggregate, how many memory cells are in an SSD. Mm-hmm. The problem is the old way of doing it was that the computer would just sort of pick the closest sector and write to that.
Okay.
It's not good for an SSD because what will happen is it will write the same sector over and over again.
Oh, and then kill it.
It will wear it down. Okay. What trim does is it spreads it out. It makes sure that it's calling from different sectors, random sectors, instead of rewriting to the same cells over and over again. Theoretically, that should extend the life of your SSD.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Does defragging have any effect on an SSD?
Yeah. Don't ever defrag.
Don't ever
defrag. Yeah, there are a couple of other things.
Wait, ever defrag?
Don't. If you have an SSD, don't defrag. Okay. Period. Okay. You don't have to. Because the reason why we defrag in a rotating drive is because you want those sectors to be concurrent.
Right.
So that the needle, or the head...
Doesn't have to travel
back and forth. There is no needle. There is no head. This is all solid state.
Right.
So there is no difference. It's not like you have memory on this side,
right,
and then
which
on
is
this
harder
side,
for
and
it
then
to
the,
read, yeah.
the electronic head has no. It's, it could read any sector as easily as any other sector.
Right.
So defragging, all it does is it uses up your writes, and actually, it uses up a lot.
Oh, yeah, because it's moving everything.
It's moving
around,
everything around. Yeah, so that's a great way to
so
kill.
Don't,
yeah.
Don't do
so
it.
How about this? If you want to kill an SSD, defrag the heck out of it.
Over and over
just
and over.
Just over and over. Yeah. Like, if you've got something that's in warranty, but it's just at the end of the warranty, just defrag it a lot and call up the warranty. Oh, it died.
Oh,
it's
so weird.
It doesn't work anymore.
Okay, good okay. to know.
There's also using AHCI mode. Again, this is one of those legacy things from rotating SATA drives. SATA, when it was created, had AHCI, had a mode that would make sure that it was doing everything it needed to do to make sure that your data was safe. It would protect the rotating drive. Well, again, you're not a rotating drive,
right.
So use AHCI mode to turn off all the SATA functions that optimize for rotating hard drives.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. There's also a few other things. You want to enable the write caching to the SSD. You want to turn off Windows-based write cache buffering. Both of those features are designed to keep you from losing data in the event of a catastrophic loss of power. So, in other words, like on a hard drive, when you're writing data to the drive, you want to make sure that it finishes the write. So Windows pays extra special attention to make sure that everything was moved over.
Uh-huh.
You don't really have to do that for an SSD because the transfer is so fast and it's so instantaneous. So you could turn that off. You take away a little bit of the security margin, but you do get back a little bit of speed, and you know that's good. You also want to disable indexing. As I said, you want to avoid defragging. You want to disable superfetch, and you want to disable prefetch. Those are all things that worked well for rotating drives, not necessary for SSDs, and you get a performance benefit.
Okay.
You know what? I just realized
what
we should probably do an episode on optimizing SSD.
Ooh.
For both Windows and Mac. That might be
totally.
Be a good thing. Yeah. So, thanks. Good question.
Thanks for it. See, when we do these feedback questions, we come up with more
ideas. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's next, Gregory?
Well, up next is Dan Stephenson, and he recently watched our episode about action cameras. He
Ooh.
Wants to know how Monoprice's cameras stack up against GoPro.
Yeah. So... I actually don't have any experience using the Monoprice cameras.
I do.
You've used them before?
Yeah, they're good.
They seem,
they're good.
They seem good for what they are. I mean, GoPros.
Yeah, let's be honest. Okay, go do it.
All right, I have a love hate relationship with the GoPros because they do have. They're probably the top tier when it comes to action cam stuff. But they also have a great marketing team, so they're pretty popular. So I definitely want to try out these Monoprice cameras. But so we got this other one that came in. This is the Expo from Pile. And it's like every other action cam seems to want to try
like
and copy
it. It looks almost exactly like a GoPro.
Right. So it's hard to distinguish because this is the GoPro and then this is
even the housings look the same.
The housings look the same. So I was looking up one of the Monoprice ones, the Sport Wi-Fi one of the CNET reviews, and it looks just like the GoPro Hero 2. And the price isn't that bad. I think we have a link for it, Alex. I want to show the picture of it. But it seems comparable to a GoPro Hero 2.
Yeah, yeah.
For about $50 less, and that's about what they all kind of come
right.
in.
Right, like for this one, it actually does include an LCD screen
does
in the back, which is an option on the GoPro. You have to actually buy the monitor
extension.
Back, right? But here's the thing. Like, the Monoprice cameras, I played with them. They're actually really, really good. Okay, but if you put it side by side with a GoPro, the GoPro still looks better. So
right.
that's the killer. It's like, yeah, some of these are less expensive, but is it really so much less expensive that it would justify getting a less capable camera, a camera with slightly lower quality, and a camera that doesn't have as many mounting options?
Right. It's a compromise.
Yeah.
So I definitely would be down to try some of these out. I'll see if Carson can get them for us on Before You Buy or something like that. But and then there's also the cheaper action camera that Monoprice makes, and this seems more comparable to one of the other cameras I reviewed, the Papa Go.
I mean, this has a use case. I mean, at that low price point, because now you're talking about something that's almost, you know, a third of what the cheapest GoPro is going to cost. You get a decent camera, and you get something that if it gets destroyed,
You're not going to be too upset about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Whereas even the lowest price GoPro still a little bit of investment. I just got this one because I'm going on vacation, so mm-hmm. and I found a little extra money in my budget. so I actually paid for a Hero 3 Plus, mm-hmm. which is something that I think we haven't reviewed yet.
No.
One of the things that I most like about this, especially since I go scuba diving, is the ProTune, the automatic color and light balancing.
Yeah.
It's really, really good when you compare it against anything else.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you can buy some of these other cheaper cameras, and if you just want to do some recording for your commute and just make sure you have that, they're good for that. But if you want to make your own videos and you want to do it in 1080 and you're used to doing color balance or matching with a DSLR and stuff, the GoPros are pretty good for that. And I wouldn't mind playing with that 3 Plus that you have, if you don't mind. Some of the other housings, like for this Pile Expo, the mounting stuff will work with some of your existing
that's
GoPro
actually hilarious
stuff.
All the mount, they all changing their product to use the GoPro mountings,
right?
So technically you can use the GoPro stuff, except and this is the weirdest part about this,
the case doesn't quite fit around the other
case doesn't quite fit, and the foot doesn't fit into the, it's like a little bit too big to fit in the GoPro foot. So I'm wondering, we were talking about this yesterday, like,
so they don't get sued?
This is like a lawsuit thing? Like, oh no, it's totally different because we can't fit in your boot.
Oops. Well, and the case on that one too, you notice it doesn't have the extra locking mechanism. So if you were to take it underwater, it could just, if you brush up against it, it'll flip up.
All the GoPro cases to release, you have to do positive feedback. You have to push a little knob and then pull the tab. Right. This, if you were underwater and you accidentally like brushed it up against your regulator, it will totally just open the case.
Right.
Which I think is bad.
Yeah. So in the end, I need to do some more testing, which I am more than happy to do. But it really depends on what you want to do. If you want to do like some serious video editing and make like a video out of it, then GoPro. And if you just want to record your commute and you don't want to have to worry about losing your camera, get a cheaper one. Because, they're all decent.
The monopriced one is not bad.
It really
is. I mean, I think, let me stress the fact that I prefer the GoPro, but if that's what's in your budget, it's a perfectly capable camera.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Greg, what are we at?
Well, next up is Vulcan Poksoy. he's in the market for a hub to connect between his router and modem so he can track the traffic in his network. What's his best option?
Okay, yeah, I remember this one. Okay, so he found on eBay a 10 base T hub, and he remembered us when we did this. Remember, we were talking about how you could use a hub to tap your network,
right?
Because it's different from a switch. Whereas a switch would, anytime it receives a frame, it's going to forward it only out the port that the receiving computer exists on.
And the hub just sends everything out to every port.
Right. Yeah. We also call it a repeater. It just blows out to every port, which means I could put like a listening computer on one of these and it would hear everything that's running through the network.
And then you can figure out who's sucking up all your bandwidth.
Yes, exactly. Problem with this, using a 10 base T hub, is 10 megabits per second may sound like a lot, but it's actually not. You see, one of the biggest reasons why we don't use hubs anymore is they were incredibly inefficient.
Right, because they're sending that signal out to all the different ports.
All the different ports. Low latency, but incredibly inefficient. And so that 10 megabits, once you take away the overhead and once you take away the collisions, because anytime frames collide, you got to resend, you're at least losing 50%. Most of the time, you're losing like 70%. So that 10 base T is really like 3 megabits.
Yeah, it starts to sound a lot slower.
Yeah, and remember, that's both directions.
Oh,
so it's not 3 in each direction, it's both directions. So if you, unless you've got the crappiest DSL, like 1.5 megabits down
then it doesn't,
and 384
it won't matter.
Up. You're gonna constrain it, right? So what you want to do, and this is what I told them in the Google Plus community, is you want a 10-100 hub. Because it's still going to be inefficient, but you have a lot more headroom. So if you lose 70% of a 10-100 hub,
you won't notice it as much.
You won't notice it, but you still got 30 megabits to play with. And unless you've got a super fast connection to the outside world, if you're just like cable modem with 20 megabits per second down and say 5 megabits per second up, it will be enough to capture all the traffic without worrying about throttling your throughput.
Right. Okay. Well, that makes sense. Are those much more expensive? Or?
They're a little bit more expensive, but you could still find them on eBay. I search every once in a while because we don't make hubs anymore. Everyone makes switches.
Right.
So they're kind of a commodity, a hot commodity. I've been able to find from time to time like a 5-port 10-100 hub for, you know, $20.
Okay.
Which is still a lot less than a dedicated tap. Like the taps I use.
Yeah,
from
those
NetOptics,
are enterprise. Right?
Those are enterprise class taps, and we're talking about, you know, $1,000 to $10,000 per port.
Yeah, that's a little expensive for just wanting to tap your network.
Yeah. Probably, yeah. Yeah. Hub. Go
at
get
home.
A hub.
Yeah.
Seriously. go get a hub.
Cool.
Now, when we come back, I thought it would be time to show the folks a little bit more about Maker Faire, because Maker Faire 2014 was awesome.
Looked pretty cool.
It looked
cool.
That
octopus picture has been going around the studio all
week.
Well,
I mean, it was an octopus with flame.
Yeah.
Well,
doesn't get much better than
that. Exactly. And my sunburn has actually even started to abate.
Yeah, that's right. You're kind of starting to blend a little bit much.
I don't look like a black hole.
I don't feel
the
heat radiating off of you like I did last week.
You feel the heat.
No. Yeah. Ugh, stop it.
Okay. But, you know, before we do that, now would be a good time for us to thank the second sponsor of Know How. That's Shutterstock. Now, if you've watched Twit at all, you know what Shutterstock is. Shutterstock is the place online to get all the assets that you need for your creative project. You need pictures. You need video. You need something that gives your project a little extra kick. Well, that's what Shutterstock is going to give you. Now, Shutterstock is the place to find over 35 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips. At Shutterstock, you'll find the perfect image or video for your next creative project, whether it's for your website, a publication, an advertisement, a video, or any other type of project. You can choose from over 35 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips. And many contributors to Shutterstock are professional photographers and artists, so you know that content is going to be high quality. Shutterstock reviews each image individually for content and quality before adding it to their library, and they add over 20,000 images every day. So every time you visit, you'll find something new. Shutterstock has flexible pricing, which is what we want. You can choose individual images, packs, or a monthly subscription for the best deal. You can download 25 images a day with a standard subscription, and you can download any image in any size and pay only once. Shutterstock gives you the images you need to bring your creative projects to the next level, and they make it easy. They have sophisticated search tools that let you search and drill down by subject, color, file type, gender, emotion, and more. For example, Alex, if you could search for elf, let's find, what do you get if you just type in elf? Okay, how about this? Let's make angry sense. Elf.
Oh, that seems very specific.
Okay, how about this? A purple angry elf.
So you can drill down by color and emotion.
Oh, okay. So there's no purple, but we do have an angry elf.
Well, there's a purple one right there.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Now, see, this is the thing that we love about Shutterstock. They give you the ability to find exactly what you're looking for so that you're not constantly scrolling through every single image and video clip that they have to find exactly what you want. They also have shareable light boxes, which allow you to save images to a lightbox gallery, then access them anytime and share them with other team members. They have an award-winning iPad app, which lets you search on the go and use it to display images during presentations. Now, Shutterstock is a global marketplace. They have multilingual customer support in more than a dozen international countries and full-time customer support throughout the week. Now, you can try Shutterstock today by signing up for a free account, and we'd really like you to try it. Just jump in there and see if maybe these videos, these pictures, these vectors might help you with whatever you're creating. There is no credit card needed. You just start an account and begin using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project could be like and save your favorite images to a lightbox to review later. Once you decide to purchase, use offer code KNOWHOW514, and new accounts will receive 20% off any package. That's Shutterstock.com. And for 20% off new accounts, use the offer code KNOWHOW514. And we thank Shutterstock for their support of KNOWHOW.
It's just fun to search through those. Like Alex did.
I like
through those people.
Yeah, it's fun.
How do you come up with those pictures?
It's funny because sometimes I actually try to stump it. I like, okay, well, there's no way it's going to have a question. And then, whoa!
And then something crazy pops out.
And then I use it.
And then you put it up on your Squarespace site. Yeah.
Now, speaking of something crazy that you could put up on your Squarespace site, let's take a look at Maker Faire.
I'm Father Robert Ballester, the digital Jesuit for Twit TV, here at Maker Faire 2014. Do you remember when you were a kid? received a brand new toy, and even though the toy was fascinating, the thing that most drew your attention was the giant cardboard box it came in. Well, we're here at Giant Cardboard Robot, and they're trying to remind you of the passion you had for this most flexible of maker materials. Now, it may seem a little silly to make things like giant robot arms out of cardboard, but you got to remember, when we're talking about the maker generation, we're talking about introducing kids to designing and to building something from their imagination at a young age. And what better material than cardboard?
Now, there's a couple of problems with just getting the car to where we could start to film with it, because it was in a container in which we backed it up and pulled the emergency brake. But now the emergency brake was underneath this pig, which was no longer a pig. It was more like a pig-shaped mound of hairy, bony pudding that smelled worse than anything you've ever smelled in your life. And I know that there are people you've smelled, if you've actually ever smelled a truly dead and rotting thing, you never forget it. And you can smell the tiniest hint of it on the wind. It'd be something like, something died over there. So Jamie had to get in the car and sit on the pig. Or rather, in the pig. And reach sort of through it to release the emergency brake. Now, he had a gas mask, but it didn't have air being pumped into it, which was a problem, because there was no air in the Corvette. It was all ammonia. So he started choking, and he had to open all the windows, reach across the... It was the most... I've never seen Jamie so unhappy. And I've seen Jamie pretty unhappy. I also tried to eat ribs that day for lunch, which might be the stupidest thing I've ever done.
If you've done any sort of electronic design, you know what a pain in the butt it is to bake your own PCB. It normally involves some drilling, a copper clad board, a lot of chemicals, and a lot of time. Well, what if I told you that you could get your own quick prototype simply by drawing it? I'm here at the AJIC booth with Shinya Shimizu, who's going to explain to us what their technology can do. What is all of this?
This is conductive silver ink, with which you can just draw circuits. You're not, asking PCB manufacturers to manufacture the PCB.
The nice thing about this is it's really for fast prototyping. So if you've got an idea, you want to get it on paper, you can actually draw out the circuits to make sure that it's going to work. And it's essentially the same as printing a circuit board, only you're looking at a turnaround time of seconds rather than hours or days. Now tell me, it's not just this, right? Because no one drew this. What's this that you're holding?
This is a conductive inkjet circuit printer. So here's actual printer here, so with which you can just print electronic circuit with normal inkjet printer with our special conductive ink.
If I were to ask you who you're pitching this for, who do you want to buy this product, who do you think should buy your product, who would you tell the audience is the target for silver conductive ink?
Anyone who wants to enter the makerspace, I would say. Because, because of a 3D printer, now you can make any plastic very easily, but, electric circuits is still very difficult part and time-consuming part. But with a printer, you can print electronic circuit board immediately in 2-3 minutes.
Now, Shinya, here's the big question. Price, availability, and where do they go to find out more about AJIC?
All right. So we just finished Kickstarter project, so we're not selling right now, but a printer, the ready-to-use printer, is going to be available for $600. And the cost per print is just $2 or $3, which is quite cheap. Yeah. And the pen is available for $15, $12 here, and $15 includes a paper and some kits, which is available at Maker Faire.
Well, Shinya, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Thank you for this, because, this is going to inspire a new generation of IC makers. I'm Father Robert Ballas here, and go draw yourself a circuit.
I got so much rhythm, Brian. I got so much rhythm.
Yeah, you got something.
Oh, man.
All right.
That's
now, we are actually going to be, I'm going to tease you here a little bit, we're going to be showing you the traditional way to bake a PCB using a copper-clad board,
a little transparency, a light source, a little developer, and some nasty stuff that dissolves copper.
So you're recommending gloves and safety glasses?
Yeah, gloves.
Unless we have Greg or Jeff Needles do it?
Ooh, Jeff. Actually, we're going to be showing you how you use an intern to develop stuff without any safety equipment whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. In a closed, confined area with very little ventilation.
In fact, I'd like to pipe all the exhaust into that room. I think it makes it develop better.
It's an experiment.
Yeah, we're mean to Jeff, but you know what? So?
All right. Who's going to stop us?
Not me. Greg, what do we got next?
While you're still alive.
Our last feedback question comes from Chris Hightower. He has a phone motherboard, and it has suffered some light corrosion from possible water damage. Is it even worth the effort to fix?
Possible water damage, which makes me think maybe he brought it into the shower or something.
Yeah.
That's what I usually hear is people set it on the counter.
Or the toilet drop. Well, actually, see, because if he's talking about corrosion, it means that it probably, probably had a little bit of moisture. He kept using it. Something happened, and then he realized, oh, gosh, there's corrosion on this motherboard.
Right.
This is actually a very, very common problem, especially on the older systems.
But is it an easy problem to fix?
Okay, on a phone, no. He asked, is this going to change the IMEI number? Yes, it will. When you change the unique motherboard, you're going to change the unique identifier of the phone. So if you are tied to that IMEI, you don't swap out the motherboard. That's going to be bad. Now, I'd like to expand this a little bit because this is a common question. This is something that we get from people, which is, I've got old electronics. They've been damaged. How do I fix it? Now, this is actually a board that we had down in the basement for a while. I think this might have actually driven one of the Skype sources way back when.
Does it have a Mac Mini?
No. This is an old VIA motherboard.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's very low power. This had some water damage. It had a lot of corrosion, but you can't see any of it, right? It looks pretty neat, pretty clean. And the way that we did this is there's a few things that you can try. First of all, with a phone, you could try the bag of rice trick.
Oh, and that's supposed to absorb the moisture that's
already
on
the phone. Take your phone. If you still have moisture, take your phone, put in a bag of rice.
Mm-hmm.
Preferably, put the bag of rice in, the oven for a while at about 200 degrees. Dry it out. Then put your phone in there with the bag of rice, and it should suck out some of the water. I'm not a big fan of that just because desiccant is cheap. You know those little balls that come in whenever you buy electronics?
Oh, like whenever you buy a new pair of shoes or something
like
that?
Right. And now, here's the cool thing. That desiccant is reusable. I always save those packages because what you can
just
do
don't
is...
Don't
eat them. They're bad for you. No, but you cut them open. And you put them on a tray, and you put them in the oven, and you bake them.
You can bake them?
And again, it removes all the water. It's like brand new.
Oh,
dump your phone or motherboard electronics into that, and that absolutely will suck the water out of the air. Much, much better than rice. And besides, don't waste rice.
If you have, I've heard if you have a very high alcohol percentage.
Yes. Yes.
Dip it in that, and then the alcohol absorbs the water and then evaporates.
Good point. Isopropyl alcohol is excellent for this, and it's cheap, right? You can get a bottle of 16 ounces for $2.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is find yourself a little tub, a little tray, put it down there, and just drown it. Drown whatever electronics.
Which seems counterintuitive.
It sounds counterintuitive, but because the isopropyl alcohol will actually evaporate.
Right.
So, but the nice thing is that displaces water. So, especially on these fiber boards, the water will be drawn out by the isopropyl. Leave it there for a while, and when you take it out, go ahead and let it dry out, and all the alcohol will go away, which is nice.
Right.
Now, that doesn't fix the corrosion problem. That's just going to fix
if
it got wet. For the corrosion, this is what I would suggest. There's some. Back in the day, people had suggested to me I use a toothbrush with baking soda. Yeah, don't do that. That's stupid. That's ridiculous. Please don't do that. What you want is use isopropyl alcohol. Okay. You get a soldering brush. It's like a wire brush, but not as tense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just go over the pathways that are corroded, especially the connectors,
gently.
Until you see kind of a shine. Now, go over gently. What you don't want to do is you don't want to accidentally rip away one of those traces. If you rip a trace, it's game over. Yeah, you won't be able to fix it. And that's one of the best ways I've found to fix corrosion. Actually, I just realized this is probably a know-how bit. We should do this, right?
Another one?
Yeah.
Now we just have to find a corroded piece of hardware?
Burke! Wow, we just finding...
I hope we're making a list of these
things. We are
making
so many enemies on this show.
I know.
I like
it. Right.
Yeah.
It's all part of the plan.
So, yeah, if you've got yourself some corroded gear, if you've got yourself some gear that got wet, those are some quick tips to get out of a bind.
And getting it wet necessarily won't just break. It's if it's
yeah.
on, right?
It's and on. It's, yeah. If you get something wet, turn it off.
Yeah.
I've seen people who, like, they fall into a pool and then they pull out their phone and they're like, oh, look, it's still working. I'm like,
pull the battery if you can.
Stop.
Or turn it off. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. It's Burke.
Uh-oh, Burke.
Oh,
we were just joking,
oh,
Burke.
Thank you, Burke. Thank you, Burke.
Oh.
Burke has given us a can of Deoxy. Oh, yeah. This improves metal-to-metal connections and connectors. Actually, I've used this stuff before. This actually does work pretty well, right?
Okay.
So this would work if you use the wire brush technique. Spray this on the area of corrosion, and then you can use it to brush away the corroded area.
Thanks, Burke.
Thanks, Burke.
If your motorcycle goes missing, don't worry about it.
It's in the back, right?
Yeah.
Outside of there. Okay. Now, Burke, you're going home tonight, right? Are you driving or are you going to ride?
He's walking now after what we do.
I'd like to point out it also makes a great topping on your desiccant souffle.
That's good stuff.
Flavor.
Now, folks, I'm sorry, but we used up all our time.
How did we do that?
We're really bad at time management.
Yeah, really. Alex, you need to be on top of this a little bit better.
Sorry, I just slacked off there.
Okay, well, Alex reassigns a camera to himself. We also want to thank Greg. Greg, thank you so very much for being our Google Plus voice.
That's right.
You represent the community.
He is the ambassador.
A great hat, by the way.
Yeah.
Now, we realize that we threw a lot of stuff at you, and we're not just going to just walk away. We actually give you really, really good show notes. Where can they find our show notes?
At twit.tv/KH. And not just show notes there, but all our past episodes, links to any of the products that we may have shown. Of course, the show notes because... Well, these feedback episodes, we've gone over a lot. So yeah. Sometimes it's hard to keep track of what happened, but...
We'll have it all in there.
We'll have it.
Yeah.
Maybe.
You can also email us at knowhow@twit.tv. None of us will respond, but it will make you feel better. Instead, if you actually want to communicate with us, you jump into our G+ community. It's 6,500 people strong, or actually might be higher than that. It's filled with some of the coolest engineers, some really bright people, and some people who have great, great questions.
I know. So, that one from Ben, I wanted to answer that, and by the time I looked at it, there was already 6 responses.
Right,
like, oh,
right.
Okay, yeah, well, I guess just, they took care of it.
They're good people, exactly. they're good people. So jump in there at gplus.to/twitkh. Join us, be part of the know-it-all.
Might feature your feedback or your project.
Yeah. Also, you can find us on Twitter. If you're not into the G+ groove, go ahead and jump over to twitter.com/PadreSJ. I'm at PadreSJ. Follow me. And you can suggest topics for future episodes of Know How, as well as find out what I do in between shows.
Which is kind of cool and scary, honestly. It's the best way to get a hold of us, too, because Padre can't stop checking Twitter.
No, I can't.
But I'm at @cranky_hippo.
Yeah.
And our TD is at @anelf3.
Do you have a camera on yourself yet, Alex?
I do not.
Oh, okay.
Well, he's the disembodied voice.
He's the disembodied voice.
He's behind the camera.
He's the one who actually keeps us on time. I'm glad that we have
Except for today.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, we were going to give him more props, but he's cutting us off.
He's cutting us off. Yeah, I'm sorry. We've run out of time. Also, I wanted to mention that this may be the last feedback-heavy episode for a while. We actually listened to you, and several of you said, you know, feedback's cool, but I don't like so many of them strung together. So what we're going to start doing is we're going to cherry-pick some of the best feedback segments from the Google Plus community, and we're just going to be putting it at the end of regular episodes. So if you want to get your project featured, if you have a question that you think would make for a good bit, make sure to jump into the G+ community. Make sure to suggest it, and who knows? You might end up on an episode of Know How.
We might just butcher your name. So
yeah. How about that? Until next time. That's Greg.
Or Greg will butcher your name. That's what would happen. Because they don't let me say the names anymore.
Oh, we don't anymore. That was a bad thing.
Okay, say the line. Say the line.
Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballasair.
I'm Brian Burnett.
Is that so hard?
I thought you were going to say...
And now that you know...
Go do it. Right?
How many episodes have we done together?